You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's TicketKing.com.
Throws it up in the air, says a prayer, and Janis is on the top! Oh, please! What a cat! That's insane!
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
Reach the eye.
Get those back.
So I think that's the logical explanation.
Let's just, you know, say that didn't happen.
It was a return to greatness. It was a return to form.
It's crazy. And he just kind of flew under the radar.
Get this out there so I sound good on Cheesehead Radio.
Yeah.
No negativity allowed, sir.
So I think that's actually going to be really exciting to watch. I don't think there's anything positive we can say. There's a lot.
Oh, right? Oh, you were looking for positive.
Yeah. I guess that's, no, I guess that's what I meant. Positive, I
yeah.
think.
All right, Packer Nation, welcome back to another episode of Cheesehead Radio. Speaking of positives, we're going to really be looking for a lot of positives this week as the Packers come out of a loss to the lowly Indianapolis Colts. And Packer Nation is slowly, actually not even slowly, quickly heading for the cliff, preparing to throw themselves off. The Packers fall to 500. We are here this week to help you figure it out. Is the season over? Who should be fired? Who should be cut? Who should be traded? All these questions will be answered, probably not correctly, but we'll do our best. Anyway, my name is CD Angeli, and I'm in a very, very uncrowded, cheesy studio today. You can find my stuff over at PackersTalk.com and Cheesehead TV. I'm joined by the very lovely Michelle Bruton of Cheesehead TV and Bleacher Report. How are you doing tonight, Michelle?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, well, we'll see as we get through this show, won't we? We're missing tonight the glue, Jamie Snowden. She of Cheesehead TV. She is out on assignment, trying to figure out where the Packers are going to go next. Jersey Al of Cheesehead TV and Packers Talk will be joining us a little bit later in the show, but we're going to see if we can get her moving without him today. Wish us luck. Sponsoring the Packers Talk Network this year is the fine folks at Ticket King. They have been selling Packers badges and other tickets in Wisconsin for just short of 25 years and have earned a reputation for excellent customer service and prices. Be sure to check out their website, theticketking.com, kind of like the Ohio State University, but it is theticketking.com. Joining us at the halfway point of the show is going to be the amazing Jason Hirshhorn. You can find his stuff over at sportsonearth.com and, of course, over at SB Nation. Looking forward to hearing what he has to say because we sure have lots of questions and we need a lot of those answers. Hey, let's get right to it with this week's Packer News.
Packers News.
All right. Well, there's reason to be hopeful today with recent news out of Packers practice, where both Jared Cook and James Starks returned to the regular practice group with no restrictions on them.
Oh, the return of Neo. Now, Starks' return to the field appears to be imminent, as the Packers had running back Joique Bell. Is that how I say that, Michelle?
Joique, I think.
Joique!
I've always said Joique.
Joique Bell. Well, whatever. Some guy named Bell.
I
in
do
for
like
a visit
Joique.
On Monday. Joique. It could be either French or just like the jerk. I don't know. Joque. Joique Bell was in for a visit on Monday, but he left without signing with the Green Bay Packers.
And speaking of tight ends, pass rusher Dayton Jones, stick with me, has a solution for the Packers' red zone woes. Appearing on Clubhouse Live, he advanced his cause to play tight end in the red zone for the Packers. Whatever works, right?
Can't be much worse, I suppose. Looking back at the Packers' loss to the Colts in Week 9, yes, we have to talk about it. The Packers plummeted 9 spots, that's it, in the USA Today NFL Power Rankings as a result of that outcome. Needless to say, the pressure is on in the next few games to right the ship, or at least stop taking on so much water.
However, don't ask Aaron Rodgers if this week's game is a must-win. When asked that same question by reporters, Rodgers responded, "I've never liked that term. World War II was must-win."
Sure. Yeah. Makes total sense. Well, Brett Favre certainly seems to think the Packers are heading into some must-win territory. On his appearance on the SiriusXM NFL Blitz this week, Favre had some hot takes, saying that Rodgers and McCarthy needed to, quote, figure out a way to be excited about playing, unquote, rather than just talk about it afterwards. Oh, my God, that's hysterical.
He's, you know, Favre's a man of action. He doesn't want these words. He wants to see some results.
Definitely.
In roster news, on Monday, the Packers signed fullback Joe Carriage to the active roster from the practice squad and released safety Jermaine Whitehead, just further advancing their theory that you can never go wrong with more fullbacks.
Yes, and we certainly don't need any defensive backs. Now,
no.
Given the Packers' special... Now, wasn't Jermaine Whitehead, wasn't he the guy that screwed up on that initial kickoff return?
Yeah, so you really maybe you don't need more defensive backs if they're going to be Jermaine Whitehead level, but...
Oh, my gosh. Given the Packers' special team struggles against the Colts, including allowing a touchdown return on the opening kickoff, Carriage is a likely special team's insurance policy. Oh, boy. Given their current lack of running backs... Who knows?
And that was your Packers News of the Week. Now it's time for your...
Packer Tweets from Packer Tweets.
Well, if there is any joy in Lambeau last Sunday, it might be the most popular critter in the end zone. Vince the Squirrel, I just gave him that name, who gave Packer fans a little distraction from the debacle that they were watching... SB Nation reminded us in their tweet, a turkey invaded the field in 1988. A squirrel did Sunday. Those are the only two times the Colts have won at Lambeau Field.
It was the squirrel's fault. Well, there were plenty of other reasons why the Packers didn't fare well in that game, and much of it was running uphill on a slippery field. Our guest tonight, Jason Hirschhorn, duly noted one of our backup issues when he tweeted, can't fix slow. Bell runs like a golf cart with wheels coming off.
Sounds like my car. A Twitter user by the name of Fix the Pack, well, I will be consulting him, Fix the Pack summed up the roller coaster season we fans have endured with this tweet, 1 week we look like contenders, the next week we look like Cleveland. Dear Lord, have we really fallen that far?
Cleveland is the floor, I think.
I hope so.
And finally, if you were a little shocked by the results of last night's election, Aaron Rodgers was also pleasantly surprised that he won a good share of write-in votes for president. Mike Clemens tweeted Rodgers' deadpan response to finding out he was in the running. After 10 minutes of NFL questions, Aaron Rodgers thanked voters who wrote him in. Quote, I knew it was between me and Harambe. And that was this week's Cheesehead Radio Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week.
Any tweet that features Harambe is always going to win Tweet of the Week.
Oh, come on. Seriously, has he not jumped the shark yet?
Maybe in 2017, but I think 2016 belongs to Harambe. So listen, if you want to get featured on Cheesehead Radio, tweet about Harambe.
Just on the weeks that Michelle is picking the tweets.
So this is a rare
Nicely
privilege
done.
that I don't see.
Yeah.
Often, so.
Yeah.
Went a little
actually,
rogue
yeah,
this
I think,
week.
Yeah, you know, and you could do that every week if you really wanted, but no. All right. Well, hey, let's get to this week's playbook.
The playbook.
All right. Well, Michelle, it's just me and you. So we're going to have to start out breaking this down. Green Bay Packers lost. This is a team that I remember you telling me. In fact, I quoted you. I mean, I was talking to people. It says, no. My friend Michelle said this is like the world's worst defense, and there's nobody around Andrew Luck. And they're just going to fall over on the ground and let us score. And what the heck happened? What is going on?
Not only an awful defense, but also literally the league's worst offensive line had allowed the most sacks and the most hits on Andrew Luck heading into this game. But none of that seemed to matter when we finally got these two teams on the field. And, you know, I've always hated the term trap game. I would like to think that people getting paid millions of dollars to do a job who have millions of fans relying on them wouldn't prepare any less for any opponent. But certainly the energy level and just sort of the general morale at Lambeau was awful. I mean, this just looked like a team that didn't think it had a chance.
It was palpable, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, I just like using big words. I think that
2 points.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people right now who are pointing fingers and saying, "Well, we need to do this and we need to do that." And you know, my opinion is that we really don't know what the problem is. You know, we're not in the locker room. We don't know what's going on. But what we can do is we can identify a lot of symptoms. So I don't know. I'm going to name a symptom that I think is one of the most important symptoms that I'm seeing that probably leads to whatever the real problem is. But what I'm seeing as a huge issue, and I saw it in the game, was Aaron Rodgers and his communication level with his receivers. Last year, Jordy Nelson was injured. And if you remember, and I mentioned this several times last year because it drove me crazy. When you see an isolation shot on the wide receivers and they are not looking back, they're running their route. They turn around, look for the ball, and they stand there. No one's coming back. No one's trying to get open. No one's getting separation. And we all kind of said, well, man, you know, Aaron Rodgers must be mad at these young receivers because he doesn't have Jordy Nelson, yada, yada, yada. Jordy Nelson's doing the same stuff now. There's no communication. There's no effort on the part of those receivers. And you're just getting to the point where Rodgers is scrambling back in the backfield every single time. What really got me, Michelle, was at the end of in the second half when he started chucking that ball Favre style. I don't care. I mean, you guys aren't getting open. I'm just going to throw it up there and you guys go get it. And we had the one in the end zone that luckily was called back, and then because of a penalty. And then on the very next play, he throws another one. So
right, it was vintage gunslinger.
It was. So to me, that's one of my symptoms of where the problem is that there is clearly a lack of camaraderie, a lack of communication, a lack of trust, a lack of, and I hate to say it, it almost seems like there's a lack of liking each other. Between the receivers and the quarterback, probably the most important engine this team has.
Right, absolutely. And I think, you know, when you're in a situation in which Devontae Adams is your team's best receiver, and I'm not just talking about leading in yards or leading in touchdowns, but literally just the one who seems to be getting open or making plays or actually connecting with Aaron Rodgers, that's a horrific situation to be in, because you've got Jordy Nelson, you've got Randall Cobb, you've got people who have been to the championship game, you've got people who have done this, who are veterans, who know this, who know Rodgers, who know this playbook. And I know that one of the things we're seeing this year is that the Packers have actually, McCarthy has actually changed up the playbook and kind of his whole offensive play design quite a bit to try to ameliorate some of the injuries and some of the problems we've been seeing with the offense. And so they're not doing the no huddle as much. He is trying to kind of mix things up with the Cobra package and running some receivers out of the backfield and things like that. And it's great that he's trying to kind of stay abreast of the problem and trying to keep things fresh. But I think what you've got is you've got receivers who either don't know all of the plays that they're running or, like you said, are just so technically inept when it comes to comebacks and crosses and, you know, when it comes to actually outrunning their coverage and being able to be the types of receivers that, you know, so the best quarterbacks in the league can throw their receivers open, right? You don't need your receivers to necessarily be all-stars. And that's sort of what we've always seen from Rodgers. He's always been able to kind of make something out of players that a lot of people didn't think were all that special. I mean, you see someone like Greg Jennings or James Jones, guys who aren't able to have immense success elsewhere in the league but are just so talented in Green Bay, and you think, okay, that's got to be Aaron. That's got to be Aaron Rodgers' ability to, you know, make them look good and help them out by throwing them open. But for whatever reason, we're not seeing that this year. And so we're seeing receivers who, you know, maybe on some other squads, they might not be number one or number two. They might be your number three, number four guys who are kind of looking like that on the Packers squad because they're not doing enough to make plays.
And I'll even disagree with you in saying that if you have, yes, an injured Randall Cobb, and, you know, I won't count him, but you have Jordy Nelson. Yeah, maybe a little slowed up too. And Davante Adams. I mean, these guys, sure, they could be third wide receivers on one team, but they could be starters on a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Aaron Nagler did a really nice job when he posted a video and he just said, hey, look at the Colts. They run a route. They turn the post or turn the curl, and they're getting 5 yards of separation. I mean, I could go back there and throw the ball, and I think I have a permanently torn rotator cuff, and I could get the ball there. So there's no reason Andrew Luck can't. And he even posted, he says, look at this, Packers, this is what you do. Aaron Rodgers is a quarterback who at one point in time only needed an inch, and he would put it on a pin. And I don't think these receivers are even getting an inch right now.
Right, and I think that you bring up a really great point, because I think that when you see some other teams doing the kinds of things you want to see the Packers doing, that's when you have to step back and say, okay, well, is this actually execution or is this, you know, scheme? And I think, you know, I feel like I'm blue in the face by every week. I feel like I'm saying the Packers need to run man beater routes. They need to run trips, bunches. They need to run crossing routes. They need to stack receiver. You know, they need to do the things that we see at this point in the NFL. I mean, you see almost every other team doing things like this. With cornerbacks becoming so huge and so fast, because receivers have become so huge and so fast, you need to scheme to beat that kind of coverage. And the Packers, with their isolation route heavy schemes, they're just relying on one-on-one matchup ability, and it's just not working. And, you know, I understand they can't change their entire system overnight, but you want to see McCarthy give these talented receivers a chance to actually get in a position to catch the ball with his scheme.
So let's talk about that for a second, Michelle, because I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say about this. A lot of criticism right now directed at Mike McCarthy. A lot of people saying, it's over for him. You know, who cares? He won the Super Bowl, you know, 6 years ago, blah, 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 blah. His time's done. He's not doing it. It's a 500 team. Now, yes, the defense isn't doing great. Although, you know what? They had two nice stops. It would have been great at the end of the game if they had three stops. They had two. But you're talking about a team that's not playing with Clay Matthews and is really, really beat up in the secondary. So, you know, I give that a little bit of a pass. But this offense, when you're led by Aaron Rodgers and you have some good receivers and you still have a pretty darn nice line and you run Don Jackson how many times? What do you have, four rushes, five rushes?
Yeah, what? I have it right here, actually. Let's see.
Stat girl.
Four attempts.
Four. And he averaged, what, 4 yards a rush?
Yep.
Yeah. Ty Montgomery ran it, what, six, seven times? He averaged, what, 13 yards a rush, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But every time we keep passing and no one gets open, is there a disconnect between Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy, or is Mike McCarthy does he just not have it anymore?
There's absolutely a disconnect, and I think you see that just in terms of what each of them is kind of trying to blame at the end of the game. And you have, you know, Aaron Rodgers saying that he didn't understand, you know, why his teammates didn't seem to have any energy. And then you have McCarthy coming out and saying, actually, like, the energy was fine. And so, you know, I think in the darkest times of the McCarthy-Thompson era Packers, I think you can always kind of gauge what's going on by McCarthy and Rodgers, and when they seem to be at their most contentious, that's when things are really at the worst. But I think the problem I've always had with is Mike McCarthy on the hot seat is, A, what are our standards for coaching? What do we expect from and want from just kind of your average NFL coach each year? Because they're making the playoffs every year, almost every year. And, you know, yeah, they're not winning Super Bowls, but I think that your coach gets you to the playoffs, and I think your general manager or your scouts give you a Super Bowl ring, because you can coach if you have sort of a squad that has maybe a major flaw or has been decimated by injuries, you can still coach that squad into the playoffs. And by some combination of luck and skill, you can win in the playoffs. But the Super Bowl is usually the time when if you're just missing that great tight end or that extra big man up front to compliment Mike Daniels, or, you know, that running back who takes pressure off your passing offense. I mean, just even one or two key players is when it can all fall apart. And so that's when I sort of just kind of come down to, okay, well, if you can't really extricate Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson, do you really just blow up the whole thing and get rid of them both? Because that seems a little insane to me, just given the Packers' constant playoff contention. So I don't know. I'm glad I don't have to make that decision. It's really tough.
Yeah, but plenty of people are making that decision every day on Twitter. The title of the show tonight, and I don't know if you know, do you know what the Mendoza line is?
I don't. I was going to ask you.
Okay. Sure. Mendoza was a major league player back in the 60s and 70s, and he finished his career with, I think, a lifetime batting average of .215. And so the Mendoza line is named after him, and it's generally around 200. So, I mean, if you don't have a batting average of 200, you're pretty much out. I mean, if you're batting 199, you're said to be below the Mendoza line.
Right.
Now, the weird part about this is, and I guess talking about Packer fans and how much we expect from a team, Ray Rhodes was fired the year that he went 8-8. Was fired. Got canned. 8-8. Now, 8-8 back in the 80s and the 70s had been a great season for the Packers. But suddenly, in 1999, that's firing a coach. In 2005, we went 4-12. We fired Mike Sherman. In, 2008, I think we went 6-10. We didn't fire Mike McCarthy, but we fired pretty much everybody else. So it's weird that we as Packer fans have this need to completely pick apart a team when we hit 500 or less.
Right.
That we're calling for someone to be fired. Now, I said this on Twitter right on Sunday, if you honestly think Mike McCarthy is going to get fired in the middle of the season, you're crazy. He's done too much for the team. He's got Rhodes named after him already in Green Bay. It's not going to happen. We're not going to do that. But we do have to look at what's happening right now, and it is concerning. And if there's a disconnect between Rodgers and McCarthy, and a disconnect between Rodgers and his receivers, you know, is this a Rodgers issue, or is this just something that's trickling down? And how do you fix something like that? How do you blow something up in a way without cutting everyone to raise that? So, you know, I guess, what do you think? Do we fire Mike McCarthy just to wake up the team, or does that really, you know, is it the end, the beginning of the end for this, I guess, this regime, possibly the 20 odd years of success this team has had?
Well, and I think our comrade Al is finally here, and I know he's going to want to weigh in on this too. So I can pontificate on this for a second if you want to assist Al into the room, but, basically,
that was smooth. That was like,
yeah,
the smoothest,
right?
Segue ever. It's like,
I
nice job with that.
Yeah,
that was very, very good. How you doing, Al?
I am good. I am good. Just in time for the McCarthy discussion. Wonderful.
Yes,
we saved
good.
The
Would
best
you
for
like
you.
To chime in.
Thank you.
Gotta
thank
chime
you.
In on
well,
that, buddy.
Well, Michelle was about to speak, so let her go.
Well, and it's just quickly, I think you'll be able to spitball from this, but the thing I always bring up when this conversation comes up, as it does, it seems like once a week now, is Okay, it reminds me of when you want to trade. That's great if you want to make a trade, but you have to have a trade partner. You have to have someone who's willing to trade with you. So with coaches, you want to fire your coach, great. Who are you going to bring in to replace him? Because great NFL, or even honestly adequate NFL head coaches, don't really grow on trees. And so, you know, you can't just blow everything up without an adequate succession plan.
Yeah, and Michelle, your point exactly is why, even though I have been a McCarthy critic for many years, I've never called for him to be fired, because can't begin to tell you if there's a better coach, you know, better overall head coach out there, you know, available. All I ever wanted, and ironically I got it last year and it didn't help, was for somebody else to call the plays. Let him be the overall head coach during the game, look at all phases, and that's the way it was supposed to happen last year. And however many games into the season, he decided to take the play calling back, but really not much changed when he took the play calling back. So I'm still kind of in that same boat where I'd like to see, you know, someone else basically managing the offense during the game, because I'm generally usually not happy with some of the things that he does in terms of time management, timeouts, challenges. And then, you know, we could spend 5 hours talking about scheme, and we have in the past, but, you know, some of the things that I've seen from year to year that I don't like, I would just like to have a change there. Still don't want McCarthy fired for the exact reason you stated, though. Who else, you know, who better are you going to get to be a head coach that isn't going to just be a dumpster fire, isn't going to be a one-year Ray Rhodes, you know? Do you make change just for the sake of change like that? I'm not really a big fan of that. But I'm still not happy with him, if that rambling
right, I mean, it's,
dissertation made any sense.
No, yeah, and it's, at this point, I mean, who do you bring in, Mike Zimmer? Like, there's no possible option right now, and you don't gamble when you have someone like Aaron Rodgers, who's only got a couple years left, and that sounds so morbid, like he's dying, but you know what I mean, he is only with the Packers for a limited amount of time. That's not the time to get crazy and try to, I keep saying, blow the whole thing up and try to bring in a whole new regime. I mean, you've got to figure out what's broken with your current system and fix it adequately and quickly. You can't keep your star quarterback and then go and replace everyone around him and expect to win the Super Bowl in the following season.
Yeah, totally agree. CD?
Yeah, so what else is on your mind? You came in late. So we discussed all the important stuff already. So do you have anything else that's pressing?
Oh, well, that's a heck of a lead-in.
Well, you know, you got to hit the ground running when you come in the middle of the show, bud.
Yeah, you know, well, other than McCarthy, well, I mean, I have a topic, but it's my hot pocket, so I don't know if I want to really go there right now. I want to save that one for the hot pocket.
I'd like you to keep your hot pocket to yourself, please, Hal.
Okay. I will keep that to myself then.
Thank you.
In which case... Go ahead.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit. We had a little bit of a failure from... Well, I guess some of the failures on special teams have to be discussed also. Your boy,
Fire
Mason Crosby.
Slocum.
Yep, Fire Slocum coming on back. But obviously the initial... Well, and we also have to cut Crosby. But, you know, really, that kickoff return to start the game, which, by the way, I missed. I mean, I thought it was on Fox, and it took me a second to get over there. By the time I got there, we were already down 6-0.
Well, actually, it doesn't matter because they didn't show it.
Oh, you missed it, too. That's right.
Right.
That's right. I forgot about it.
Right.
They didn't show it. They were showing commercials. They come back from commercial, and it's 7-0.
Right, okay, and I'm doing my live stream thing for Bleacher Report, and so I'm like, I don't know, I'm going to get started, and then it comes on, and it's 7-0, and I'm like, wait, what just happened? It's just unreal.
Yeah.
But in reality, that kickoff return was the difference in the game.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When you come down to it at the very end.
So what do you guys think? Special teams, and I'll leave you with that topic as I slowly make my way over to the phone.
Well, I guess there was one casualty already, right?
I mentioned that before.
Oh, okay.
What's his name?
Yeah, Jermaine Whitehead.
We
didn't dive in. We just mentioned.
We didn't dive in.
Jermaine Whitehead.
Jermaine White, I just casually mentioned that. But, yeah, what did you think about that? Because I was kind of like, oh, my gosh, really? You're going to scapegoat this kid?
Yeah, and funny, I think you could very easily scapegoat Jeff Janis on that touchdown kickoff return and on the other one, okay? I mean, he came down, was met by a blocker who just kind of stood in front of him and made no effort to go after the ball carrier. Now, I understand he's got some outside contained responsibility, but that doesn't mean you just kind of stand there and watch the guy run inside of you, right? At some point, when you see him cut inside, all right, at least you make an effort. So I could have scapegoated Janis just as easily as Whitehead, but obviously I guess Whitehead was the easier target to take out, right?
Right, but it's such a band-aid to me, and it's so unfortunate that, you know, for a phase of the game that has been not stellar in recent history, to think that this poor kid who whiffed an assignment is just going to solve all of your ills by dumping him off. It's just...
Is that another one of those we really stunk? So let's set an example and let's show that
exactly.
There's some accountability, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's accountability. Okay, yeah, if you're the number 53 man in the roster, you might get cut. Yeah, that's accountability. Yeah, that's going to scare everybody else. Yeah, that's just silly.
And it just reminded me so much, too. Obviously, the stakes weren't nearly as high, but the Seattle game. And once again, just so much went wrong in that game. And to just scapegoat...
Poor Bostic.
And the poor guy is still broken up about it. And again, the stakes were obviously so high, but
Is he playing anywhere still?
I don't think so.
I know he was with the Jets for a short period of time, but
right.
And some other teams possibly, but he's a free agent. Well, you know, speaking of free agents, I think we may have one. So he is still
That's
with the Jets?
I think
so. That's a good segue. I didn't mean to interrupt the segue.
See, you blew it now. my first good segue in 6 years. All right. Go ahead, CB.
Cheesehead Radio. Special guest.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us right now in the Cheesy Studios, Jason Hirshhorn. How are you doing, sir? He of Acme Packing and Sports Unearthed and SB Nation. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Oh, great to have you back. All right. Well, let's get you started out a little bit. Yeah, this is a question, I guess, that's pressing to me. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but the concerns I have with the running game and the concerns I have a little bit with the play calling, we were just discussing Don Jackson. 4 carries, 16 yards. This is not bad. We're talking Ty Montgomery is pretty explosive back there, and yet we're barely running the ball 11 times, and Aaron Rodgers goes back over and over and over again and has to scramble and maybe rush himself. What's going on with the lack of dedication to the run game, even if it's working?
I think on some level, it really is an indication of what they can do with the current personnel, or at least the personnel that they had available the last couple of games. The numbers obviously speak very well of Ty Montgomery, but when you actually, you know, watch that tape, you'll notice that he's really only getting the yards that are blocked for him, which is actually a testament to that offensive line. But if you force them to be in that situation where they have to run block more often for a player that is not necessarily going to break through contact very often, then maybe it's not as effective. Maybe it's something that at least with the players that they have now, they need to treat as more of like a specialty thing, almost as though it's like a gimmick rather than something that's a main piece of the offense the way it was when Lacy was healthy. So at least with the sample we have now, I'm not sure they're doing that part wrong. It's just when you see the end result, I understand why people have complaints about it.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, this is Al. Welcome onto the show again.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Anytime. So listen, there was big news out of Green Bay on Monday. I don't know if you caught it or not, but after watching the game film, Mike McCarthy identified the cause of the malaise on offense: not enough fullbacks. So practice squad fullback Joe Carriage was promoted to the roster as the obvious fix to what's wrong with the offense. Don't you agree? It must have been not enough fullbacks.
That might, I suppose, be true, but less of an issue for the offense and more of the special teams. I mean, everywhere this was reported, this was related to the special teams breakdown on that opening kickoff return, and Jermaine Whitehead being the main, well, one of the main culprits for that. So I understand, at least on some level, why they did it for that reason. But, I mean, this was a move that seemed to happen in lieu of them bringing on another running back. I mean, it had been reported they had interest in Joik Bell, possibly a running back that many of us don't believe sells anything left, but someone who at least could have come in and maybe provided something in the form of, you know, pass catching out of the backfield, maybe some better pass protection. So it was on some level a curious move because special teams, though a problem, obviously the most recent game, has not been their biggest problem this season.
Yeah, you mentioned also, you know, Jerome Whitehead and other possible victims there of the special team issues. I thought Jeff Janis, we were just talking about this before, I thought Jeff Janis did a horrible job on both of those kickoff returns. I think he could have easily been the scapegoat, but I guess he has more value than Whitehead did.
Well, Whitehead's not going to try to catch passes with his face the way you get with Janis, so I understand why they wanted to keep him around.
You know, yeah, there's that value there, yes, the face catch. Very good. Michelle?
Hi, Jason.
Hey, Michelle.
You guys might not realize this, but Jason and I are real-life friends. We're not even, like, Twitter colleagues, but we are legitimate, you know, we've gone out as couples, real-life friends. So just want to, you know, yeah.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. So
Michelle, I thought we were friends. What's going on?
You never asked us to dinner.
We're millennial friends.
We are.
Okay.
I got you. All right, Jason. So you touched on this actually just a second ago in your response to Al, but if you go back and listen to the show, you'll hear that we featured one of your tweets in our tweet segment. And when I read it, I just cracked up laughing. You said that Joik Bell runs like a golf cart with the wheels coming off. Which I thought was great. And so, you know, obviously the Packers didn't see what they needed to see from Bell, but I know that you aren't really his biggest fan. Why exactly do you think that he isn't the right fit for this offense, and why do you think, you know, he left town without a contract?
Well, he was a player that even in his best years lacked real vision. I mean, we saw, especially with the Detroit Lions, sometimes the offensive line would open up a hole for him and he just wouldn't see it. I mean, the kind of stuff we would complain about with Trent Richardson when he's with the Raiders for that brief period of time, that was also true with Joik Bell. But then he got slower, and when you have very limited physical skills by NFL standards to begin with, and then those somewhat dissipate, it's really hard to see him making a positive impact on an offense. So for Green Bay, a team that, granted, needs running back help in the worst way, someone like Joik Bell, while can maybe provide something in the passing game, is not necessarily going to provide the things that they really need as a ball carrier. So maybe that's something that they will get back soon with James Starks, though I have my doubts about that as well. Maybe it's something that comes out of Don Jackson. Maybe it is something that comes out of Ty Montgomery. We'll have to see when he's not on the snap limitation. But these are all things I did not expect to come from Joik Bell.
That's, I think, the most interesting thing to me about what the Packers have been attempting to do with the running back situation is that, you know, obviously the Packers run this power run scheme that kind of necessitates a real, you know, pile pusher in the middle. And they're looking at all these guys who are kind of your third down scat back or maybe like receiver out of the backfield type guys. And so it's just, you know, those are the guys who are free agents right now or who are available, but it's just interesting that they don't seem to be even looking to fill the primary need of their scheme.
Well, I think on some level their scheme is a little more flexible when it comes to running backs, and it's something that they maybe adjusted towards more more man stuff relative to gap when they had Eddie Lacy, because of the things that Eddie Lacy did well. If you ignore the Lacy draft pick and you look at all the other running backs they've brought in, at least in the draft, those are more guys like you described, the more of the scat backs, the guys who can both catch balls out of the backfield, maybe do things sort of away from the tackle box as much as go up the middle. So someone like Joyke Bell is sort of going against that grain too. I think it maybe speaks to, again, what they consider the strength or limitation of their offensive line.
Right, for sure.
Jason,
hey, Al?
Yep, I'll jump in. Jason, you wrote a piece Monday for Sports on Earth attempting to make sense of the NFC North, which is really kind of a wacky division this year. And you talked about how the Lions have kind of remade their offense after being forced to do so by Calvin Johnson's retirement. And, you know, they're kind of forgoing the big play offense now. I happen to believe that's exactly what the Packers need to do, you know, that their personnel fits that scheme better. And when we've seen it in spurts this season, it's been successful. But yet, you know, they keep trying for big plays and lamenting that, well, we had opportunities for the big play and didn't make them. But in the meantime, you know, I think they're ruining the rhythm of their offense by doing that and killing drives. Is someone's ego maybe getting in the way here?
No, I think they actually are, though, trying to do similar things. Like you mentioned, it's just one team is better positioned to do those things than the other. And in a weird twist of fate, that's actually the Detroit Lions this year. Without Calvin Johnson, they are not trying to stretch the field in the same way they were in previous seasons. I mean, they have a little bit of that, obviously. I mean, Marvin Jones has managed to get behind secondaries many times this season. But that's not what they're trying to do usually on a play-to-play basis. They are trying to hit you in sort of that, like, 6 to 9 yard range away from the line of scrimmage and then putting their receivers in position to get yards after the catch. I mean, that's actually where Anquan Boldin has been very successful. That's certainly where Golden Tate, now he's getting a little more usage, has been more successful. And when you look at the Packers receiving core, there's less of those guys, at least in terms of the healthy group. Cobb, for example, has done this very well in the past, but, I mean, he's not healthy right now. That's why we did not see him until very late in the game when they felt like they had to use him. Jordy Nelson was a guy who in the past could do this, but we don't see that Jordy Nelson anymore. He probably never will again, given his age and his injury history. And then you look further down the line, I mean, Adams has done this a little bit this season, but we still have some of those inconsistencies when we watch him on tape. And the rest of the guys are just very young, and you're not expecting much of them on a game-to-game basis anyway. So I think that speaks, again, to the personnel. I'm not sure that it's something that's wrong with Mike McCarthy, the play caller. When I watched this pass game on tape, I saw them doing a lot of the things that they were not doing early in the season and just not them taking advantage of it. Like, they were using a lot of pre-snap motion, some bunched receivers, and they were getting their guys open. But for the most part, when you had an open receiver, it did not seem like Rodgers saw them. Now, that's just a one-game sample. I mean, that can happen to any quarterback, no matter how well they're playing overall. But it seems like it's happening more often this season with this offense.
Okay,
so that's actually a really great segue into the next thing I wanted to ask you, which is basically we got some encouraging news that it looks like Jared Cook is back at full practice and could possibly return this week. So speaking about, you know, what they're trying to do on offense and trying to make life a little bit easier in Aaron Rodgers, how does Cook's return change what they're able to do on offense, even not just with a competent tight end, but, you know, distinct from what Richard Rodgers brings? And how will the Titans try to defend that if Cook is indeed back?
When you have a tight end available like Jared Cook relative to Richard Rodgers, you're going to affect more of what that interior of the defense does from the second and third level. So Jared Cook did not have big numbers before his high ankle sprain, but if you watched him, you noticed that he had to have somebody on him past the second level every single time. That was not necessarily the case with Richard Rodgers because he didn't even make it to that level. So just having another guy that you can put towards the middle of the defense. It's going to affect the like geometry of the way they align and the way they move. It changes the passing windows for Aaron Rodgers, even if, again, he's not looking for Jared Cook, because if you have to stick someone on him, if you have to stretch the defense right up the middle, it makes it easier for some of the other receivers from the boundaries to work over into the middle. That's something that we saw a couple of those games earlier in the year against the Detroit Lions, something that we might see again in the next couple of games if Jared Cook is available and, you know, really able to move. He has to be more than just on the field. If he's just moving, 75% of his normal speed, then I'm not sure that you really see that effect. But if the
right.
Jared Cook that we saw earlier in the year is there, then I think just him being on the field is going to help get other receivers open.
Right, exactly. I agree.
Jason,
happy
Jason.
To confirm your suspicions.
All right. Jason, this week I was reminded of the 2009 season when the Packers lost to a pretty bad Tampa Bay team to drop to 4-4. And the next day there was the infamous come to Jesus meeting. After that, they won 5 straight games, 7 of their last 8 to win the wild card and then eventually lose to Arizona. But have you heard of any come to Jesus meetings this week or anything interesting like that? Maybe they need that.
Not necessarily any meetings, but I don't think that your idea is necessarily unfounded, because if you look at that schedule of what they have left, there is no single game that looks unwinnable, even for this version of the Packers. You know, this week against Tennessee, the Titans are not as bad as they have been in past seasons, but they are certainly a team that, like the Colts this past week, if you get ahead of them early, you can just put them out of their misery. Like, this is not a team that really knows how to win yet or has the personnel to really come back big from a deficit. So if you have a couple matchups like that, and then the only real, like, obvious tough games left are the upcoming game against the Minnesota Vikings, but that one's at Lambeau Field, and then the other home game against the Seattle Seahawks, a team that, though right now clearly better than the Packers, is more vulnerable on the road than they are at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. So they don't have a lot of wiggle room left, as you mentioned, but it's certainly possible that they're able to close up some of their fixable gaps. That's a team that can at least take care of business at enough of those games to put themselves back into the conversation. And it's also dependent on what happens in the NFC North. I mean, the Vikings themselves have not performed very well the last 3 weeks. Their record is better, but their offensive deficiencies are worse, and they have less of an ability to fix that. I mean, it's really hard to get quality offensive linemen in the middle of the season. It appears like that's what they need more than anything else. You look at the Detroit Lions, as well as the offense has played, that defense is the worst in the league, bar none. And over the course of the second half of the year, that might end up biting them in the rear. So if the Packers get a little bit of help and they improve some of their deficiencies, it's possible. I don't think it's more likely than not, but I don't think it's unlikely either.
Okay.
All right. You are listening to Jason Hirschhorn of Sports on Earth and Acme Packing Company on Cheesehead Radio. Jason, just one final question for you. So do you think Clinton Dix's big play against the Colts helped kind of turn around this narrative that he's not a splashy player, or do you think he still has more to prove? And he, you know, just to add, he certainly is the type of player who's doing a lot of things right that maybe don't end up on the stat sheet, but obviously people want to see more of these kind of splashy big plays from him.
Well, my immediate reaction was to ask, which one do you mean? Because he had 2 interceptions, one with the help of pressure from Mike Daniels, and I forget who forced the pressure on the second one. It might have been Nick Perry. Both of those resulted in interceptions. Then he had the sack later in the game. So he created 3 big splash plays, and almost a 4th, actually, had he been able to sack Andrew Luck on that final Indianapolis possession. Perhaps the Packers do get another chance to touch the ball in that game. So that's a lot of splash plays for any one player in one game, and we've seen this from him in the past where maybe he starts the season off a little slowly. That certainly happened in 2014 as a rookie, and I think it happened to a certain degree last year. But you're in that part of the season where he gets into a rhythm, he starts getting a little bit lucky with help from some of his teammates, and he takes advantage of those things. So I absolutely think that Clinton Dix can be a field-tilting player, I don't think he's going to be the kind of safety that like Earl Thomas has been for so many years now with the Seattle Seahawks, but he's the kind of player who can play a very competent center field, force some turnovers, make some things happen in the backfield when asked to, and really just creates havoc all around for the defense.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, Jason,
I'm so
like
happy to be
thank
on.
You. Yeah, we're just really, really happy to have you back on the show again. Thank you for talking with us. If you are not following Jason, you can find him on Twitter at @by_JBH. If you're not following him, there's really no reason for it. Please get doing that as soon as possible. You can catch his stuff over at Sports on Earth and over at Acme Packing Company at SBNation.com. Jason, thank you so much for joining us once again here on Cheesehead Radio.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night.
Thank you. Good night, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
Okay.
All right. There we go.
Another fine interview.
It was. So before we hit our hot pockets, just general mood. Where's your hope level for the rest of this season? Is we talked a little bit. I know we didn't ask the question, but we talked a little bit about even Bob McGinn actually, for once in his life, being positive. And I was actually being positive and quote-unquote a voice of reason on Twitter on Sunday, which at this point, the apocalypse really has, could have predicted some other things this week. Where's your feelings for – no one caught that. Where's your feelings for the Packers season going? I mean, is it – oh, good, good. Where is this Packers season going? Michelle, let's start with you. Is this you have hope for the season, or do you really think that this is kind of a you put these last season together and this season together, and is this a very troubling trend?
So this is a little bit of a roundabout way to come at this, but it brings up something I've sort of been thinking and kind of trying to tell anyone who will listen to me for a while now, which is basically, and I think this is a little bit of a hot take, but you have a team in the Packers who are consistently making the playoffs and losing. So that means they're finishing, in terms of draft position in the bottom half of the league in the 20s or the high 20s in draft position. And so you have a team who does have some really big holes, kind of obvious holes. I mean, they need another big guy up front next to Mike Daniels to force pressure. They need a difference-making tight end. It looks like they might need to draft another running back high now. They have a lot of these holes that would make them a championship-caliber team, and they don't really ever get the opportunity to fill them because Ted Thompson is loath to trade up, and, the 27th pick doesn't always get you the kind of guy you need. And so part of me just wonders, and again, I'm not advocating they tank. I'm not, any of that. The season will end how it will end. But I'm just saying that if the Packers do either miss the wild card berth or lose early, I guess they couldn't lose early in playoffs. They'd have to miss them entirely for this to work. But say they don't get a wild card berth and they're out, what if that lands them the opportunity to draft that guy who's going to be a huge difference maker next year and actually get them through the Super Bowl and help them win because they finally have gotten a player of such talent that they've really been missing the opportunity to get. So that's kind of my, it seems pessimistic, but I think it's backwardsly optimistic view of just, I think that's one kind of silver lining that can come out of the Packers missing the playoffs this year. That being said, looking at their remaining schedule, it's such a toss-up, right? Because you've got the Eagles who have been really mercurial this year. You don't really know which team's going to show up. The Seahawks always give the Packers trouble. And then you've got Bears, Vikings, Lions to finish out the season. And this division is crazy right now. I mean, they could lose all three of those games or they could win all three of those games. So I didn't really answer your question, but that's how I feel.
I followed most of that. That was the evil Michelle there with the whole draft pick scenario, coming up with that one. Evil Michelle reared its ugly head there and wants to have a high draft pick. Thanks a lot, Michelle.
It they haven't had one in so long, and it's kind of reflected on their roster talent.
Yeah, what's funny? I do the – I'm the Packers analyst for a draft site, Draft Tech, and you know, we do a new mock. They don't call them mock drafts, but in any case, we do one every week. And this week, the Packers came up at pick 17, and I'm like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. I'm always used to picking 25, 26, 27.
Right.
I'm at 17. I've got a whole different set of players I should be looking at.
Right.
You know?
You're like, what do I mean? What do you mean I could get an Alabama defensive lineman? What do you
right.
mean I could get
it? It was a very weird feeling, you know, it really was. So I kind of get where you're coming from that perspective, but that was still an evil plan. That's all I can say.
Suck for luck. Is that kind of part two
yeah.
again?
Yeah.
What do you think, Jersey Al? Where is this team going?
Jeez. I have so many different scenarios. You know, you could the next three games being away, in a way, I think might actually be a good thing for the Packers. It might be one of those, you know, team unity things, get away from family and friends and Green Bay influences and just go on the road and hunker down and focus 100% on the task at hand, which is getting this team turned around. You know, so I'm kind of taking the optimistic view of having three away games, you know, as the next three games. But I don't necessarily think, you know, they're particularly easy. The Eagles have been very good at home. You know, they've been very bad on the road and very good at home. So that's not going to be easy. And then you've got the Houston Texans and the Seahawks, which are both home games, but both difficult teams. And then, as Michelle said, you finish out with the NFC North division, specifically the last two games, the Vikings and the Lions. So I think it's really, really difficult to predict which way this season could go. You know, it could really – I don't have a strong feeling either way, basically.
So, nutshell, I ask you both a question.
Neither one of them. Yeah. Michelle comes up with some evil draft plot. I go around in circles and don't give you an answer, and here we are.
Well, are you going to be
right.
a tiebreaker, CD, or what?
I'm not even sure there's a tie to break. You guys just both kind of ran around in circles for a while. I'm like, you know. No, I'll tell you, and Jersey Al, you should know this. The title of my article this year for the Cheesehead TV draft guide. Do you remember it?
The title of the article? No.
Yeah? Well, it's because you didn't read it either. But the title was The Beginning of the End with a Question Mark. And, you know, in there I kind of detailed some things that happened last season. A lot of things we actually talked about, Michelle, just some of the communication with Rodgers, the disconnect with McCarthy. Went through a lot of the clues we saw last season. And just how I said, you know, this really has to get fixed. This has to be fixed this season because otherwise there's a real issue. And, yeah, I know I'm positive on Sunday, but I think the reality is there are some underlying issues that I can definitely see the Packers going on a two-game run and putting the chip on their shoulder and putting it together, but it just feels like a sugar rush. It feels saccharine. It feels caffeinated, and it's going to wear off, that some of the problems are intense. And I guess I see the Packers probably working their way to an 8 or 9 win season. Possibly even best case scenario. And as we discussed earlier, Michelle, I don't know if that's good enough for Packer fans. I don't know if that's anything that they're going to be settling for. I think the frustration in how they're playing is a bigger deal than just simply the results in the win-loss column. So I'm nervous. I don't think it's going to be a great end to this season.
Real
carry
on Cheesehead Radio today.
Yep.
And that's where's my funeral music? Sorry about that. Hey, someone's got to be negative around here. Come on.
Yeah, it's usually me.
I know.
Oh,
well. And seriously, from what we've seen in the last 3 weeks, which was, you know, beating up on a really, really super bad team, and, you know, losing to a good team and now losing to a pretty bad team, I'm surprised the Packers only dropped 9 spots in the power rankings. I mean, that this is a very mediocre team at this point, and they've got a lot to prove. So there you go. Speaking of which, it's time to get to this week's
Hot Pocket.
Hot Pockets, a little quick final discussion topic. Jersey Al, let's start with you, because I know you were so excited to share it earlier.
My Hot Pocket for Mike McCarthy, or probably more Aaron Rodgers, because I think it's more him freelancing than McCarthy calling for it, but I blame them both, is stop throwing bombs on third and manageable. They are drive killers. They are momentum killers. They are rhythm killers to your offense. Get the first down. You have 6 yards to go, 3rd and 6. Throw an 8-yard pass. You saw, of all teams, the Colts show the Packers how it's done on that 96-yard drive. Every time they had a 3rd down, just very simple, you know, run a bunch of short routes, find somebody open, get the 1st down, continue down the field, which is what they did. I'm tired of seeing this. It's not just this year. I've been yelling about this for many years. Just keep drives moving. Keep possession. Don't punt the ball. Don't give the ball back to the other team. Stop throwing bombs on 3rd and manageable yardage.
All right. Michelle, your Hot Pocket.
Well, I think to sort of piggyback off what Al said, I think a big problem, obviously, this week, you know, it seems like every week there's a new unit that is kind of the Packers' bad unit du jour, and that's part of the problem with this team. And this week it was the defensive line. You were facing, as I said to CD earlier, literally the worst offensive line in the league without question, and the defensive line just couldn't get it done, especially on 3rd down. And so you have, you know, that final series, and it's not fair to put this entire game on the defense and on that final Colts series, but those two failures to stop on 3rd down just completely killed any chance the Packers had of coming back. And I think that, you know, Mike Daniels can't do it all alone. I think he got 4 of the team's 5 pressures that the defensive line had gotten on Luck himself. And, you know, we drafted Kenny Clark. He's not really doing much. LaTroy Guyon isn't really doing much. Mike Pinnell has been good, but, you know, he hasn't been even playing for that many games. And so basically I just think that, you know, we had a defensive line that we were so excited about at the beginning of the year. They were limiting everyone on the ground. They, you know, they were being disruptive, and they can't lose that heading into this back stretch of games, because that's one of the big strengths that they did have.
All right. Bad unit du jour.
You
can trademark that.
I like it.
Copyright 2016. All right. And my Hot Pocket tonight, the year was 2000. Ray Rhodes just fired after a miserable 8-8 season in which the reins of Brett Favre seemed to have been heavily loosened, and he set a nice little record for interceptions at that point in his career. And I made the suggestion rather loudly that I thought the Packers should trade Brett Favre. Now, mind you, as you can probably guess, I was tarred and feathered. It was very painful. But I did maintain at the point where he is, and if no one was going to rein him in the way Holmgren did, there was no time his value was ever going to be that high again. He was, what, probably 33, 34 years old at best, maybe 31, past his prime. If you could get 3 number 1s and 2 number 2s for him, you could have set this team up for life. Now, in retrospect, I'm glad we didn't, although, let's be honest, he never did get us back to a Super Bowl. Now it's, I just find it humorous that almost at the same point in the seasons, and to a degree, kind of a same scenario where Rodgers is struggling and not quite at his MVP levels that he was in 2014, that suddenly everyone's crying out on Twitter, trade Rodgers. And everyone's going, pshaw. But it's interesting that other people are suggesting this. And the idea is, hey, what is Rodgers going to be able to do for us for the rest of his career? Is he going to get us to a Super Bowl? I think it's just something for us to ponder looking back at 2000 and also in 2016.
Interesting. Trade Rodgers.
I'm not suggesting it. I got tired and fettered.
You're just floating it.
I'm done. I'm repeating it. This is what I'm seeing all over Twitter is trade Rodgers.
You must be following some fine folks then.
I follow you, my friend. I do follow you. So,
but you haven't
so you're in good.
Me say that.
I've not seen you say that, but I just thought it was interesting someone was saying it, and I don't know. Anyway, well, let's get to this week's Packer game predictions.
Cheesehead Radio, Packers game predictions.
Oh, boy. The beginning of a three-game road stretch. If the Packers can't win at home, what are they going to do on the road? Probably better. We'll see. Heading down to Tennessee to take on the Titans. Let's start with Michelle.
All right. So, Bob McGinn was feeling optimistic, surprisingly. It's not always that way. That the Packers were going to go on a little bit of a run. And I'm not quite sure how many games the resurgence will last, but I think there will be a little bit of a resurgence this week against the Titans. I'm going to say Packers 27, Titans 17. I don't know if this offense can actually score more than 30 points, but I do know that Aaron Rodgers plays excellent when he plays angry. And after that Colts loss, the Packers have a lot to be angry about. So I think they bounce back a little bit here.
Optimism from the millennial. Excellent. Mr. Al Bracco, what do you say?
Well, I think that there should be plenty of chips on the shoulders of the Packers players this week. They've gotten lambasted, which is the right pronunciation, Miss Editor?
Basted.
Basted it was. Okay. I had it right.
Joy K, I think. Joy K or Shaka?
They've been criticized left and right, up and down, everybody on a team. Nobody's really been spared. And, you know, they know that they've underperformed and underachieved. They should all have a real chip on their shoulder and come out with a little fire in their eyes this week, hopefully. So I'm going with Packers 31, Titans 17.
All right. My name is C.D. Angeli, and I can't see them losing. I really can't. I'm very nervous about it. But I think I agree with Al. I think there's going to be a little bit of inspired play. I think you see what's becoming the pattern is this whole relax shh thing coming from Rodgers, and I see you're going to see it from him next week. I don't know if it's going to last. But I think it's going to get us through a game. I'm going to say 2017 Packers. And at this point, that's good enough for me to get a win.
Yep.
All right. Should we call it a night, guys?
It's a night.
It is a night.
Saturday.
Okay, well, thank you all so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio. And thank you to our special guest, Jason Hirshhorn. Make sure to head on over to PackersTalk.com, where you can explore several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow Packers Talk Net on Twitter and like the Packers Talk Network page on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you will find it. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a nice review if you can. You can also listen by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatching app, and just search for Packers Talk. Finally, please be sure to support our sponsor, the fine folks at Ticket King. You can find them on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap, everybody. Good night, and go Pack Go.
All right.
Good night, everyone.
We'll see you next week on Cheesehead Radio. Go Pack Go. Good night, everyone.